You were born with individual strengths and a unique purpose. Don't let fears, false beliefs, or life's happenings diminish your influence. It's time to live and lead for impact. Host Kirsten Ross, expert of transformation, will help you defeat the drama and overcome the trauma that can stop you in your tracks. You'll gain focus, find confidence, and take bold action. Unleash passionate, purposeful you. Let's go.
Welcome to the Live and Lead for Impact podcast. I'm Kirsten Ross, your host. Thank you for joining me. I am really excited today because I have a wonderful guest who is making a huge impact in this world. Her name is Tracy Maxfield. She's a nurse with over 36 years experience. She experienced her first episode of clinical depression in her 20s and lived with chronic depression ever since. However, nothing prepared her for the acute depressive episode she experienced in 2015. Encouraged by a psychologist, Tracy started a blog called Escaping the Rabbit Hole, My Life with Depression, to better help her friends understand her depression. She has since published a book by the same name. In September, Tracy embarked on a new life journey. She sold her home, donated most of her possessions to various charities, and made a commitment to try and make a difference in the world, and is spending 6 months traveling in the USA talking about mental illness and bullying in children and teenagers. Thank you, Tracy. I'm so excited to learn more about what inspired you and what you're up to.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yeah. So, you know, you shared a little bit that you have chronic depression and started writing about it. But what about that experience really motivated you to make this impact?
Well, it was unlike any other depressive experience that I'd had. My first one was in my 20s and resolved reasonably quickly with medications and counseling. After about a year, I was able to get off the medications and life seemed to be going okay. Then about 15 years later, had another episode. And it was at that point that I saw a psychiatrist who felt, based on the family history and the trauma that I had experienced as a child, that I very highly likely had a genetic type of depression. And at that point, kept me on a very low dose of antidepressants and forewarned me that in all likelihood, sometime in the future, and it usually goes anywhere from 10 to 15 years, if there were significant stresses in my life, I may have another episode. And so, you know, you don't exactly mark that on the calendar or anything.
Right.
You know, you just, life goes on. Except in 2015, I fell down the rabbit hole and I experienced a massive nervous breakdown. That's how I likened it at the very beginning for people to kind of understand. It was an acute major depressive episode. And what was different to this one was that in the previous ones, I had never experienced the need to want to kill myself. The suicidal ideation and the thoughts were so absolutely intense. Certainly my life circumstances didn't help either. When I look back, I can see exactly the contributory factors that resulted in me falling down the rabbit hole. And so my ex and I were unable to have children, but one of our dogs died very suddenly. 3 months later, we separated very quickly. 6 months after that, I bought my own home and I moved into a completely different area. And in effect, whilst filing for divorce, was now living on my own. As a result of the separation, I lost a significant number of friends because even though people shouldn't, they do tend to take sides. And I was working in an extremely stressful position at that time where I was already being subjected to lots of bullying and intimidation and harassment. But But because of everything else that was going on in my life, that was almost kind of like secondary, because I was dealing with everything else. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, as I started to center myself and get back my life, the bullying increased and increased. And from the December of 2014 right through till the August of 2015, it just... surreal is the only word I still use to describe it. It took on a whole new dynamic. It was it was absolutely horrendous, and culminated in a meeting in the August of 2015, where I was subjected to such heinous, horrible allegations and lies, and it was just horrendous. Even the two union representatives present had said they'd never, in all their years of having these meetings, ever seen anything like it before. But ultimately what it did was, I went home and I was in a state of shock. I mean, obviously I was crying, because I couldn't even make sense of what had happened. It was kind of like Spanish Inquisition. And I just felt numb, and I just went to bed. And then when I woke up the next morning, I literally couldn't move. And I thought, what's going on? This doesn't make sense. My mood was just dreadful, like dark and heavy and sadness and hopelessness and what am I going to do? But I physically couldn't get out of bed. When I finally sat up, it felt like someone had come in the night and just bathed me in cement.
Wow.
And when I finally got off the bed, I couldn't walk. I crawled upstairs to the kitchen and thought, you know, okay, just make yourself a cup of coffee or something. And that was it. Not only the emotional and the mental component, but it was the physical. And so that was on a Friday morning. On the Saturday, I actually counted out pills. It was a Saturday evening, and I opened a bottle of acetaminophen and counted out 44 pills on the kitchen counter, and poured myself a glass of water. And in 10 seconds, there was a voice. And I made a split second decision and ran.
Oh my gosh.
Ran downstairs, grabbed my purse, threw on my flip flops, and just jumped into my car and just drove. And it was like 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. There's nothing open except Walmart. And so I just walked into Walmart, and I just walked up and down the aisles like a zombie. And I looked an absolute frightful mess, absolute total mess. And I mean, it was, and when I finally thought, okay, I can go home, I'm not going to do anything, I drove home, put the pills back in the bottle, and went to bed. And then on the Monday, I went to see my doctor, because the nurse in me was like, okay, something bad is happening here.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Because said it was unlike any other depressive episode I'd ever had, and it continued to be. And that was, I literally likened it to living in a rabbit hole. It felt like it was so dark and earthy. And I felt like I was trapped in the bottom. And there was the tiniest chink of light, but I couldn't see that there was any foothold or anything that could even help me negotiate a way to get out. And that was scary, because, I mean, 36 years of nursing, I've dealt with people with mental illness, depression, I've had it myself, and yet this was one time where I couldn't even figure out how I could ever get out to see the light again. It was like everything had just completely shut down, shut off.
So through all that, at what point, so I know you started writing, and then at what point did you have that kind of, I don't know if it felt like a flipped switch or something, where it was like, I'm going to turn this into helping others. I need to make an impact out of what I've been through.
It was about a year into therapy. And finally, after lots of medication tweaking, and I finally And I had journaled actually from the very first day. I've always been a person that when I'm in crisis, I journal because I want to try and make sense of things. Yeah. And so I had journaled and just personal to myself, and I'd written a letter to myself. And then about a year in, I kept saying to my psychologist, it's so frustrating because the Brit in me always, when I would leave my place, I would always try and look my best. So, you know, hair would be combed, nice clean clothes on. And so, and when you see people, it's the classic, hi, I'm fine. You know, the fake smile. I'm okay, I'm fine. And I was very open and would always tell people what was wrong with me. And I got some, comments that came back were just unreal. But it just showed the lack of understanding and the inability of people to understand that you can stand there and look just fine, but they don't know what's actually going on inside. And my friends were like that as well, and they were all in the medical field. And so my psychologist said, well, why don't you start a blog and just write down your thoughts and your feelings and invite them to the blog and see if you get a positive response. And I was extremely scared because, again, I was still very vulnerable, and I'd only just really started to feel that I was healing. And so I thought, okay, just put it out there. And almost immediately the response was, oh my goodness, we didn't even realize it was that bad. I can't believe it. And, you know, even, you know, doctors and psychologists were saying, I had no idea. I had no idea that there were the physical effects would be so debilitating as well. And so I continued to do my blog and the suicide attempts and everything. And in a way, it was cathartic because I was finally able to express everything that people could read. And so they walked through my brain at the at that time of what I was going through and fighting with. And all the comments kept coming back, like, you need to put this in a book. I've learned so much. I did not realize. I have a new understanding of really don't, just because a person presents well, you got to go deeper. And so in the June, so I started in the December. In the June, I had done quite extensive blogging and was continuing to have people say, you got to put this in a book to help other people. And at that time, that's when I was going through in my head, I was thinking, well, should I do it? And again, you're putting yourself out there. And then I thought, well, do you actually want anyone else to go through what you're going through and think that they're the only one?
It's so brave of you to do that, because anytime you put something out there that's so vulnerable, you know, it's tough to have a thick skin if you don't get the response that you want. So it's amazing that you did that at such a vulnerable time.
And yes, I mean, up until the day when it was published, there was still that little inherent fear. But yes, I thought, you know what? No, if it's helped medical professionals like nurses and doctors and psychologists have a better understanding, then that's a positive. But I primarily wrote it for anyone that was going through depression or had just gone through, to read it. And I hope that they would, I just wanted them to understand that it's as brutal as it is, you can get out of it. And that was because I did. And that was the end of the book. It was the, you know, depression hasn't disappeared forever, but I understand it better, and I know how to manage the bad days, and that I was completely alone. Like, I was literally alone. I had nobody, and I had no choice. I had to get out of bed to eat. I had to get out of bed to go to the washroom, to go to the doctor. There was no one to drive me. There was no one to poke me and say, And so I thought, you know what? If I can do it, and if I can fight my way through the suicide, then others need to know that they can, that there is that light. Mm-hmm. And so that really motivated me. I connected with a former editor, and she'd written a number of books, a social worker in Montreal, and said, if I give you access to my blog, I just want a very honest opinion. Is this book worthy? And don't be afraid of offending me if you say mm-hmm. no. And she goes, yeah, sure, let me take a look. And a couple of hours later, she contacted me and said, I have you an editor in Toronto.
Oh, wow.
And that was it. It was, yeah. It just went from A to B to C. And then the next thing you know, we have a book.
Yeah, that's great. So what was the biggest, well, I'm sure the depression. I was going to say, what's the biggest, you know, internal challenge or external challenge that you've had to overcome, and how did you overcome it? But I guess I'm saying beyond the depression, which obviously had to be the biggest challenge and the uphill battle. But were there other things that kind of got in your way of making your impact, getting the book out?
I still encounter challenges. What I had decided to do once, after the book was released and got really, really good reviews, mm-hmm. I hired a publicist. And so initially it was just, I was hoping to promote the book and just really talk openly about mental illness and the stigma and depression, mm-hmm. because they call it the invisible illness for a reason. Mm-hmm. And that was originally my plan. And then I was invited to a middle school because there are a number of illustrations in the book, mm-hmm. Just black and white illustrations, but they conveyed how my mood was that day. And you didn't even need words. You look at it. And lots of the kids had seen my book and had identified with some of the illustrations. And mm-hmm. so the teacher invited me to the English class and said, I'd actually like you to come over and explain to them how imagery can be translated mm-hmm. into words to help them write more descriptive essays. And so that was the mm-hmm. original intent. And so I spoke to a class of 15-year-olds, and I had all the illustrations blown up into there were about 20 by 20. And I put them all behind me on the easel. And immediately you could see them all nudging and whispering to each other, you know, that looks like me and that's how I feel today. And I started to talk about my book, and all the hands went up, and the questions were all about depression and suicide and how I made it out the rabbit hole and how bad can it get and how do you get to the light, and very, very intelligent, very articulate questions. Mm-hmm. And then they started opening up. This is how I feel. The picture, there was a picture of a stick figure running from a black cloud. And a boy said, that's how I feel every day. Mm. And so that opened the door to conversation. And then another person would say, my mom's had depression for years. And then a girl came at the end and said, thank you so much for coming to talk to us. And I said, you're welcome. And she said, where can I buy your book? And so I was giving her information, and then I could see she started crying, and I said, is everything okay? And she leant into me and whispered, I just came home from hospital last night after my second suicide attempt. Mm. And she was 15 years old. And yeah. And I actually said, how about I give you my book? And so I wrote a message to her and gave her my book. And she actually she's followed me on social media since, a couple of them have.
Yeah.
But that was the defining moment, because I walked away and thought, wow.
Mm-hmm.
15 years old, suicide already, so mm-hmm. many of them there are going through something. And, you know, there's no opportunity to even be kids and enjoy life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I thought, maybe this is what I should do. And then 2 weeks later, when I returned to do an 8-hour human library, where they all come and sit at 30-minute intervals. They have all pre-signed up to come and sit and talk to you about a career. And so they had me there as the author, but mm-hmm. I wasn't there as the author. Mm-hmm. They all came. When the first group sat down at 8:30, I started talking about how to write and publish a book. And they were just looking at me, and I said, you seem confused. Why did you sign up to sit at my table? And they said, because we heard about you from the English class. Mm. And I said, okay, what would you like to know? And they said, we need to know how you escaped the rabbit hole. And that was it.
Yeah.
It was every 30 minutes, anywhere from 6 to 12 teenagers would sit down and they wanted to talk about suicide and mental illness and what they could do to help themselves or others, about bullying. And 63 kids came and confided in me what they were going through. And it just broke my heart.
Yeah.
I drove home at the end of the afternoon absolutely crying my eyes out, because I could not believe how many of them were going through this. And when I did some research and found out the statistics, it was even more alarming. And I thought, well, if I, the way I felt and the challenges I had to deal with when I went through my experience, and I'm an adult, so I have already learned social skills and coping strategies and how to support myself. How are you going to expect an 11-year-old, a 13-year-old, or a 15-year-old mm-hmm. to do it? And so I thought, I got to change the focus. I've got to go and I've got to concentrate on children and teenagers and start talking about mental illness and suicide. And bullying came along automatically, not only because of my experience, but also because so many kids who have a mental illness are subjected to bullying, mm-hmm. but also so many kids develop a mental illness because of bullying. Mm-hmm. And so it's impossible not to bring bullying up as you're talking about suicide and mental illness. And so that's everything changed. And that became my platform. And that's what I've done ever since. I've been on podcasts, newspaper, TV, radio. I'm actually leaving on Thursday. I'm flying to Kansas. I'm on TV there talking about my mission. Mm-hmm. And then I fly to Florida on March 2nd. I was asked to be a breakout presenter at their teachers conference in Florida. And great. So I'm talking about what teachers can do to help kids who may have a mental illness and not realize it, or have been diagnosed, but how they can help empower them and support them. Because mental illness once the child is diagnosed, 50% of all lifetime mental illnesses show signs by the age 14, mm-hmm. 75% by the age of 24. So you know that there are so many kids out there that have a mental illness, and it's a lifetime. So this is something that they will now need to learn to understand and identify triggers and develop coping strategies. And so it's like, how do we help them? How do we empower them to do that? And so, my philosophy and my little motto on my business cards is engage, educate, empower. If we engage them and we educate them, then we empower them to get not only to support each other, but also to help themselves and how they can go on in life, even though they have a depression or a bipolar disorder or a social anxiety disorder. How can they take control back and still have a good life with this? It shouldn't define them. It is, right? It's the same. It doesn't define me. And I think that's the problem, is it's become the stigma because society allowed it to define people. Right. Oh, she committed a crime. She must have a mental illness. Or, then she's crazy. She has a mental illness. No, you're not.
Right.
you know, there is true insanity, and that is something that's very different. But you're not crazy because you have a mental illness. It's a disorder in the brain, and you can learn how to live with it. I mean, most kids, if they get treatment in the early stages and have appropriate counselings and supports and are followed up, and I think that's the important thing. Once you're diagnosed, if you're 11 and diagnosed, your follow-up has to continue until you're an adult, because we have the hormonal changes, right? And we have everything that a teenager, a child goes through. I mean, the frontal lobe of the brain is not fully developed until you're 24. And so we have to support them through college, university, until the brain is fully developed and has grown. And at that point, then they can embark into true adulthood. But yeah, at 17, your brain hasn't fully developed for you to master the skills of having to deal with your depression. You still need that support.
And I can't imagine, you know, I've said, you know, that stigma that kind of isolates puts you into silence. And then in the world of, so we have the world of social media that I can't imagine being a teen, because of people are so hateful and divisive and all that stuff. So I can't imagine being a teen and having to deal with what happens on social media. But on top of that, it's also very obvious when other illnesses, I mean, if someone breaks a leg or there's some kind of surgery happening, everyone's jumping on the bandwagon and signing up for meal trains and sending over casseroles. And, you know, with mental illness, that is just not happening. People don't know. And you're just like, hey, where's my casserole? You know, and it's not, that's just not the way it works. There isn't, people don't understand, or you're not talking about it. And so on top of, you know, the debilitating nature of it, is just, it's also just not, you're isolated.
Absolutely. And I mean, I saw that myself. It's people just, either it makes them uncomfortable or they believe misinformation. I mean, there is so much misinformation that adds to the stigma. And I mean, you see it. I mean, there's a shooting on TV and their first assumption is, oh, well, he has to be crazy and have a mental illness. Being a psychopath is a mental illness, but a psychopath, you can't change. That's the thing. A sociopath and a psychopath, you have great difficulty changing them because it's something they're inherently born with, and it develops over time. But it's, I mean, there are always, I think what's troubling is they immediately use that label and they then run with it. And so there's such an outcry that someone that's just being diagnosed or has just finally had the courage to go out into the world and say, actually, I'm living with anxiety and depression, but I'm managing fine, but I do have bad days. They then feel that they will be vilified and, you know, it's almost like someone's going to put the scarlet letter on you and, you know, point you out. And that's got to stop, because if I did a post a couple of days ago and I said, I dare anyone to contact me and tell me that they have never in their lifetime known someone, experienced, or is aware of someone who has a mental illness. And not one person contacted me.
Because
when they sit down and think about it, absolutely, they all have. And everyone, I mean, if one in five children and teenagers have a mental illness, and then one in four adults, and I believe actually that it's one in three. I think the new stats they're going to release are going to show it's increased significantly. if one in three adults have a mental illness and you look around your workplace or even your neighborhood, then how many people is that?
Yeah, you're constantly surrounded by people who are dealing with it personally or through a loved one or someone they know. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so it's the same. I mean, one in three kids are being bullied. Mm-hmm. Well, then go in the school and take a look around. If there's 300 in a school, mm-hmm. one in three, then 100 kids are being bullied.
Right.
And it's people... I mean, that's why I throw a lot of stats around, because I think it gets them in, it hits them right mm-hmm. between the eyes. And I mean, so today in the US, 16 teenagers will die by mm. suicide. There's mm. going to be more, but 16 will die by suicide. Mm. And people go, oh, well, okay, 16. Well, that's 16 that had their whole future right. in front of them that could have been doctors, teachers, policemen, scientists. One right. of them could have known the cure for cancer. We don't know, right? But there was so much hope and potential. And then what about all the friends and the family and the mm-hmm. parents they left behind? Because a death by suicide is unlike any other type of grieving. And I don't want to discount any grieving is horrible and it's a process, but to actually lose your child because of suicide, the guilt and the emotional impact that comes with that is it goes on for generations. Parents
yeah,
do
I can't
not
imagine.
They don't recover. And so I follow that with, okay, so 16 teenagers, then you multiply that by five, because five family members directly impacted. But what people don't realize is 3,041 kids in grades 9 through 12 are going to attempt to kill themselves today.
Mm, gosh. Okay, you're...
are you
it's almost more than you can bear to hear when you start diving into the statistics. And I think that... I think part of what keeps us semi-calm as parents is that sense that this won't happen to us, you know, and then you start hearing these statistics and it gets closer to home.
And it's I know everyone, we all want to just wrap ourselves up in a nice warm blanket. And, you know, things like that, it's like, okay, no, it can't happen to me. But as I said, it's, because yeah. of the stigma
right.
and the bullying and the intimidation that these, I would hate to be a teenager today.
Yeah.
Just because of what goes on in social media. I mean, the bullying is
right.
out of control. And I mean, and this is global. It's not just the US is going through this. It's right. every country in the world is going through this horrific cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. And something has to be done because mm-hmm. people, again, I've received the most negativity and threats through my mission about bullying than mental illness. And it's people saying bullying isn't a problem, or, you know, just tell the kids to toughen up. And it's a case of, no, your bully is not Nelson on the school field in The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. It's like, you got to move away from this, people. You don't get it. It's in the late 1980s, bullying started to change. 1990s, when we hit 2000, and accessed all social media routes, bullying has become so horrific. The things that they can do. I mean, and sometimes, and yes, most of the time it is people that you know, but you can also be trolled by someone from another country who isn't even a child. It's an adult.
Right. Well, I tell you, I am so grateful that you're doing your important work, and your passion for your mission absolutely comes through in in your voice and your knowledge. And so I so appreciate you are doing such important work, and your stats definitely highlight the need for what you're doing even more. So I thank you so much for your very important impact and, you know, turning your trials into triumphs by, you know, letting that switch flip and, you know, using your life and your challenges to help others. And I will look forward to seeing the positive impact that you continue to make for years to come. And I know you're just kind of getting started. And so I just thank you. So if anyone is listening right now and wants to connect with Tracy, her the link to her website will be on the show notes for today's episode. So go to defeatthedrama.com and then click on the podcast tab and then go to today's episode. And her website link will be there, but it's also, let me tell you what it is. It's Tracy, T-R-A-C-E-Y. Maxfield, MAXFIELD.com, and go follow her, find her and follow her, and check out her book and her blog, Escaping the Rabbit Hole, to learn more about depression and what it's like, and then follow her on her mission to help impact our world so that fewer teenagers especially are having to live in silence and alone with depression and bullying. So thank you so much, Tracy. I really appreciate you being with me today and sharing everything that you're up to.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yes. All right. And take care, and everyone get out there and make your big impact.